Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. To listen to Business Movers 1 week early and ad-free, join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Download the Wondery app in your Apple or Google Play mobile app store today. It's early October 2008 in the San Francisco offices of the advertising firm BBDO. Howard sips a coffee and takes a seat at a table across from a longtime friend, BBDO Chief Creative Officer David Lubars. Howard has come to San Francisco on a mission. He wants Starbucks to find its voice, and he needs David's help. David is known as one of the most innovative minds in advertising, and he's thrilled to talk to Howard about Starbucks, but he's surprised that the meeting is even happening. David knows Howard has shied away from traditional marketing campaigns for most of his career.
So Howard, you know, the fact that you're here, does this mean that you're finally willing to admit advertising is worthwhile?
I've always thought advertising was worthwhile, David. I just hate the way most people do it. David laughs. It's a sentiment he's used to hearing from Howard.
Well, so why are we talking now? Starbucks is getting squeezed from the bottom by fast food brands like McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts. And we're getting squeezed from the top by high-end independent coffee shops. We're caught in the middle. Outside forces are defining us. $4 is dumb.
Yeah, I've seen the billboards.
Oh, God, everyone's seen the billboards. The billboards are the main reason I'm talking to you.
McDonald's has continued to hammer Starbucks with its aggressive coffee-themed marketing campaign. And Howard has had enough.
So, David, I want Starbucks to get on the offensive. Attack McDonald's? No. But I want to create something that lets us define us. Something that expresses Starbucks' personality, embraces our beliefs.
Well, what are those beliefs, Howard?
Well, I believe Starbucks is a community. I know people like to laugh at stuff like that, but for me, it's no joke. Community is the core of the company.
So you want an advertising campaign that encourages people to come together at Starbucks.
Well, it's not just about coming together. It's about coming together to contribute in some sort of way.
Right then, Howard stops and his eyes go wide. He has an idea, a big one.
David, do you know how many Americans vote in presidential elections?
No.
We have a huge election coming up next month. Most people think that maybe 54% of eligible voters will actually show up at the polls.
Okay, what are we talking about?
I want Starbucks to get involved in the 2008 presidential election.
For a moment, David is stunned.
Howard, I'm not sure getting political is the way to go here.
No, I don't want to tell people who to vote for. I just want to tell them to vote.
It's not about politics. It's about civic duty.
David catches on, and his wheels start turning. He loves a challenge, and this type of campaign would be a big one.
Well, it couldn't just be an ad. I mean, we'd just be telling people what to do. We would need to create an event, something that encourages people to go to the polls and then come to Starbucks to share the moment, share the process, share it.
Howard starts seeing it in his mind's eye. He knows exactly what he wants to do.
Oh, David, it's simple. It's simple. Okay, if people vote, we give them a free coffee. It's the least we can do to reward them for taking part in America's future.
Well, it's simple, but it won't be easy.
Well, nothing worth doing ever is.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
After his meeting with David, Howard returned to Seattle. He was excited to have BBDO on board, but he had more on his plate than just an Election Day marketing campaign. Howard had another huge project he was working on that he hoped would reignite Starbucks' commitment to community and help pull Starbucks out of its financial hole. After a long period of declining sales, plunging stock prices, and store closures, Howard knew that he was losing trust at all levels of the company. He also knew he was running out of time to turn things around. So Howard would put a plan in motion to bring his company together, regain his partner's support together, and inspire them to fight for Starbucks survival together. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is Business Movers. In August 2005, disaster struck Louisiana.
Tonight, the overwhelming, catastrophic damage from Hurricane Katrina. In New Orleans, the city that thought it dodged a bullet, it's now a disaster zone. Water everywhere.
The storm destroyed large swaths of New Orleans, rendered areas uninhabitable, and displaced tens of thousands of people. In the immediate aftermath of Katrina, the Starbucks Foundation donated $5 million to aid New Orleans, and Howard personally donated another $1 million. The hope was that New Orleans could somehow quickly be rebuilt. But 3 years later, in 2008, Howard was shocked by the fact that there were still parts of the city in ruins. Howard recommitted himself to putting Starbucks' focus back on community. And he knew New Orleans was a community he desperately wanted to help. In order to do that, Howard took a bold step. He decided the company-wide conference that had only ever taken place in Seattle would be moved to New Orleans. 10,000 Starbucks employees from across the country would come to the city. And as part of the conference, Howard ensured that everyone in attendance would volunteer with community organizations. Howard believed that the conference was a perfect way to demonstrate to everyone at Starbucks that giving back remained a core component of the company's culture. Howard also thought the conference was an important step in his quest to rebuild the Starbucks experience. Howard said the event would give Starbucks leadership a chance to talk with partners from across the country. Leadership could lay out clear goals, listen to partners' concerns, and everyone could move forward together. Howard had long believed that baristas and store managers were the driving force behind Starbucks, and he knew the company's success fell heavily on their shoulders. Howard wanted to make sure their voices were heard, and he wanted to give them the tools and techniques to run their stores as effectively as possible. But the conference was a logistical undertaking, and it wasn't cheap, costing close to $30 million. As the conference approached, some of the Starbucks board members started to panic. With the company struggling financially, they were looking to save money wherever they could, and the expensive conference was an easy target. So while Howard and his team worked around the clock to get everything in place, there was a move within the company to shut the conference down. Soon, Howard would find himself at odds with his own board. With the future of the conference and the company hanging in the balance, Howard would have to fight for what he believed was the soul of Starbucks. This is the third episode in our four-part series on Starbucks and Howard Schultz, culture and community. It's October 2008 in the halls of Starbucks Center in Seattle. Howard is laser-focused as he heads to a conference room to meet with the board. He's ready for an argument, so he runs through the talking points in his head. Howard has recently returned from San Francisco, where he's nailed down an advertising deal with BBDO. But that's not what the board wants to talk about. They want to talk about New Orleans. And many of them want Howard to call off the company-wide event he and his team have been working so hard to put together. Howard steps into the conference room and takes a seat at the head of the table.
All right. Before we jump in, I just want to say that the leadership team and I are thrilled with how things are shaping up for the conference. We believe that this is going to go down as an important moment in the history of this company. The meeting almost immediately takes on the feel of a press conference, with Howard fielding questions and concerns from the room. Howard, we're in the middle of a global economic crisis, and we're losing money month after month. How are you justify even holding this conference? Well, it's easy for me to justify. I believe this conference is crucial to turning things around for Starbucks. How is it going to turn things around? I mean, travel, food, accommodations, everything else, this thing is going to cost us $30 million. Yes. And the bulk of that $30 million will go directly into the New Orleans economy. Cities across the country wanted to host us. But we chose New Orleans because we can have a positive impact on a city that desperately needs it. But let me remind you, it's not just about the money. We're bringing 10,000 people to New Orleans, and all of them are going to volunteer time with community organizations. All of us are going to be giving back. Howard, I mean this with respect, and everyone in this room appreciates what you're trying to do, but with the state of the company, many of us believe that there are more important things to focus on than trying to help one city. Howard takes a breath. He understands the argument coming from the board, but he doesn't believe they fully understand the impact this conference can have. Yeah, I appreciate the concerns. I understand them. And helping New Orleans is obviously high on my priority list. But this conference will do a lot more than just that. We're in the process of closing 600 of our American stores, laying off thousands of our people. We are not just losing money anymore. We are losing our partners' trust. We have to rally our people. We have to get everyone working towards a common goal again. We have to take the time to teach our managers how to operate their stores more profitably. If we don't do this, Starbucks is going to go down. Howard believes he's laid out his argument as clearly as he can. To him, the reasons for everyone to come together at this conference are obvious, but not everyone on the board is sold. All of these are good goals, but we can achieve them in different manners. We can set up a digital conference, do all of these things without spending tens of millions of dollars. I've thought of that, and I'm a firm believer in the promise of digital communications. But the most powerful form of human connection still comes from looking someone directly in the eyes, not through a screen. We're at a crucial moment, you know? We have to reignite people's hearts and minds. We have to let our partners connect with us, connect with leadership. We have to listen to them, and we have to inspire them. The only way that's going to happen is if we're all in the same place at the same time. But Howard, no buts. We're going to New Orleans. Eventually, Howard's passionate plea to bring everyone together and face the future as a team won over the majority of the board. Even those who still had reservations about the cost of the event were willing to trust Howard, the man who had turned Starbucks into a global coffee powerhouse. Howard had to make sure he wouldn't let them down. On October 26, 2008, Howard and his leadership team flew to New Orleans. Howard said as soon as he arrived, he felt a jolt of energy. As he told the board, Howard believed the conference would serve two distinct purposes: to bring his partners together as a community and give back to New Orleans, and two, to help those partners learn new skills and techniques to run more profitable stores. Howard saw those two goals as the foundation of his approach to business. For decades, he'd argued that companies could do the right thing and still turn profits, and he was ready to prove it. The volunteer effort in New Orleans was colossal. 10,000 Starbucks partners split their time between six different organizations. Some volunteer groups helped repair and repaint houses. Others worked to clean streets and storm drains that still bore damage from Katrina. One group planted over 1,000 trees in the city, while another focused on refurbishing parks and public schools. The company's ability to have a direct impact on the city is why Howard had been so committed to keeping the conference in New Orleans. He and his team were extremely proud of what Starbucks was able to accomplish.
No one company has come into New Orleans and done a block of volunteerism that anywhere approaches what we're doing, with over 50,000 hours of volunteer hours.
So Howard knew the conference was successful in achieving his first goal. Starbucks partners were coming together to help a community in need. But Howard also knew the conference had to achieve his second goal. Partners would have to leave New Orleans better equipped and more committed to running their stores efficiently and effectively. Thankfully, Howard had laid out a clear plan for how to make that happen. Howard wanted the leadership team to work directly with Starbucks partners at the conference, so they crafted what they called interactive galleries. These galleries were mock-up stores that provided partners with a fully immersive experience where they could hone store management techniques, practice customer interaction, and work to find the perfect Starbucks experience. In addition to the hands-on training and the interactive galleries, Starbucks partners attended roundtable discussions, Q&A sessions, and leadership panels. All of these events were designed to provide managers and baristas with practical skills and knowledge that they could utilize in their stores as soon as they returned home. As Howard watched the conference unfold, he felt more hopeful about the future of Starbucks than he had in a long time. He knew his company was still struggling financially. But watching his partners dive into their work and come together filled him with hope. He saw company morale building, and he watched as store managers walked away from the galleries with new knowledge they were eager to employ when they got back. During an especially long and eventful day, Howard turned to a member of Starbucks leadership team and calmly said to her, "We're going to be okay." As the four-day-long conference came to an end, Howard believed it had already been a great success. But at the closing night ceremony, he wanted to leave his partners energized and eager to help their communities. And he wanted to inspire the company as a whole to think bigger when it came to giving back. Unbeknownst to the majority of people in attendance, Howard had teamed up with a foundation called RED that focused on fighting the AIDS epidemic and other global health emergencies. Howard took the stage and invited one of RED's founders to make a speech, rock icon Bono.
12 million AIDS orphans in Africa, 18 million by the end of the decade, a whole generation of active adults wiped out, children bringing up children. It's not a cause, it's an emergency. We're going to do something about it at Starbucks.
Howard left the conference inspired, as did Starbucks leadership and partners all across the country. But they weren't the only ones. David Lubars, chief creative officer of the advertising firm BBDO, had also come to New Orleans to get a look at Starbucks' corporate culture firsthand. David spent his days at the conference watching Starbucks partners volunteer across the city. He spent his nights listening to speakers like Bono talk about helping people in need. Throughout it all, David was deeply moved, and his time in New Orleans inspired him to create the Election Day ad campaign Howard had been hoping for. The ad was simple. A lone piano played, and words in green type appeared on the screen. What if we all cared enough to vote? Not just 54% of us, but 100% of us. What if we cared as much on November 5th as we care on November 4th? What if we cared all of the time the way we care some of the time? The ad ended with an offer for a free cup of Starbucks coffee on Election Day for anyone who voted. Then the final phrase appeared, "You and Starbucks. It's bigger than coffee." Howard loved the spot. He thought it defined Starbucks perfectly. He believed Starbucks was about community coming together and engaging with the future. He'd always said Starbucks was about much more than just selling coffee. The ad seemed to speak to that. The spot ran only once on TV during Saturday Night Live, just days before the November 4th, 2008 presidential election. But it was an immediate hit online and quickly went viral. And on Election Day, Starbucks stores across America poured over 2 million cups of coffee, 2.5 times more than they would have on an average weekday. In addition to the store traffic and online buzz the ad campaign created, Howard believed it was a major step in helping Starbucks find its voice. McDonald's could hurl insults like $4 is dumb all they like. Howard would keep Starbucks focused on community and bringing people together. But not everyone around Howard was convinced it would be enough. The company conference in New Orleans and the Election Day marketing campaign had sparked positive press for Starbucks and gone a long way to boost company morale. But neither alone solved Starbucks' financial situation. Starbucks finished 2008 with earnings down 53% from the previous year. Howard knew he still had a lot of work to do if Starbucks was going to avoid a further financial slide in 2009. He'd taken large-scale actions like closing 600 American stores. He created events and ad campaigns that spoke to Starbucks' larger causes. But now Howard would have to shift his focus. He would soon leave the big picture behind and get down to the minutiae of what it took to run a Starbucks store as effectively as possible. and with the help of a technique he'd long fought against, Howard would finally create the Starbucks experience he'd always imagined and bring Starbucks back to life.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's early 2009 at a Starbucks in Vancouver, Washington. Howard steps into the store and is instantly hit by the buzz of a lively conversation and the sound of laughter. Despite Starbucks' troubles, this store is performing exceptionally well, and Howard is here to find out why. Amidst the cheerful customers and baristas, Howard notices that this store is laid out differently than others. While there is some variation in store designs based on size, there's a general uniformity to how Starbucks stores are set up, both in front of the counter and behind it. But that's not the case here. Howard heads to the back office to talk to the store manager, Amy, to find out why.
Hi, Amy. Howard, I didn't know you were here yet. I would have met you out front.
No, it's fine.
Did you move things around in the store?
Oh, I thought we were allowed to do that. I didn't think it'd be a problem.
But it's not a problem, Amy. No, I love it. It's different.
And everything seems like it's exactly where it should be.
I think it is, Howard.
Yeah. It might be, because, Amy, your store is doing really well. And that's not the case everywhere. So I'm here to find out what your secret is.
Amy smiles. She's excited to get to talk to Howard about the changes she's made in her store.
The secret is the lean method. Lean is a term that dates back to early assembly lines in automobile factories. The lean methodology focuses on techniques to improve efficiency and reduce redundancies in the work environment. Starbucks has employed lean methodology on small scale at certain stores, including Amy's, but Howard has never been fully sold on what always felt like MBA speak.
Well, Amy, I'll be honest, I've never been a big believer in lean. Seems like a way to force people to count the number of steps they take from the cash register to the milk or something. Make them mop the floor in a certain way. I never wanted our partners to feel like they're coming to work in a factory. We've been using lean for a few months, and I don't feel it's a factory. Lean has freed me up to think more creatively and problem solve. I guess for me, lean's not about limiting the number of steps you're allowed to take, but it's about setting up the store in a way that makes things as easy as possible.
Howard is taken a bit aback. He's listened to pitches regarding lean from members of Starbucks leadership, but he's never talked about it directly to someone like Amy, who uses it in her own store on a daily basis. Howard might be changing his mind.
Okay, all right. Well, tell me how lean works for you.
Well, it's not about how to mop up the floor in a certain way. It really encourages you to set things up in the store to not spill things in the first place.
Ah. Well, Amy, I came to your store to find a new company policy to put in place to help Starbucks thrive. One that would benefit the company, but the partners too. Lean has benefited us.
Yeah, for sure.
Our customer satisfaction scores are up in every category. Speed of service, drink quality, overall experience, all of them. And I think it's because Lean has given me more time to work with the baristas. Every day our store is more efficient, so I can take time to teach them how to make drinks just right. I mean, before, we were always scrambling. I was pitching in on the line. I wasn't managing. I was just another employee. And I guess I'm sorry for that.
Amy, no, you don't have to apologize. It's my job to make your job easier.
And if the store was overwhelmed, that's on me and the folks in Seattle, not you. I'm thrilled you've taken the initiative to improve your store.
Thank you, Howard.
and even from the back office, both can still hear the buzz of the store and the smell of fresh coffee. Howard smiles.
You know, this store reminds me of the first coffee shop I opened. And I wanted all our stores to feel that way. Amy, I think you might have opened my eyes to something. Let's see if we can't take Lean company-wide.
When Howard met with Amy, he was instantly taken by how successful Lean methodologies had proven to be in her Vancouver, Washington store. And Howard was even more excited that Amy credited Lean with helping her become a more effective, attentive manager. But before he took a drastic step and moved to implement Lean company-wide, he wanted to make sure Amy's store wasn't an anomaly. Howard traveled to other Starbucks locations in the Pacific Northwest that had put the Lean method in place. And everywhere he went, he heard the same story. Howard listened to managers and baristas talk about how effective Lean had been for their stores. They reported positive changes in customer feedback, as well as increased productivity and revenue. Howard also discovered that the stores where Lean was in place had lower turnover among partners than most Starbucks locations. Throughout the country, new baristas often left within the first few months of taking a job at Starbucks. But in these Lean stores, baristas and managers were staying put. Howard took that to mean that people were happy to be working at Starbucks, and that made Howard happy. He returned to Seattle and pushed for a Lean program to be adopted in all of Starbucks American stores. And he didn't face pushback from his board of directors this time. Many members of the board already viewed Lean as an effective tool to lower costs and increase efficiency in stores. And in their experience, lower costs and increased efficiency led to bigger profits. Howard agreed with him. And he was thrilled that changes based on Lean could lead to higher revenue and the type of positive Starbucks experience he'd been fighting for since he'd returned as CEO. But Howard still made it a point to put his people first. He never wanted Lean to feel like a demand coming from upper management. He never wanted Starbucks to feel like a factory. One of the first choices Howard made was to bring in store managers who'd worked with the Lean method to introduce these concepts and techniques to other store managers. This allowed partners to work directly with people who understood the problems they faced on a daily basis. And while Howard and Starbucks leadership were heavily involved in the rollout of Lean, Howard believed it was far more effective for partners to learn from partners, people who shared their experience, who knew what a morning rush in a store was like. As the implementation of Lean moved forward, Howard continued his push to empower store managers. He had always thought managers knew the most effective ways to run their own stores, and Howard believed Lean should be a tool they could use to make their jobs easier. He said Lean should never be something that stood in their way. So while Howard made sure managers had access to all of the information and training for the Lean method that was available, he also made it clear that managers should have the right to suggest and implement changes that made sense for their particular stores. Store managers appreciated that, and they made the Lean method their own. As it rolled out company-wide, Howard couldn't have been happier with the introduction of Lean to Starbucks. While he'd fought it in the past, he now saw it as a way to make the Starbucks experience better than it had been for a long time. But even with Lean in place, there was still one more major change Howard would have to make. Visiting Starbucks locations across the country, Howard felt like something was off, but he couldn't quite put his finger on it. Baristas and managers worked hard everywhere he went, and customers seemed happy with the service they were given. Howard was also thrilled with the quality of the coffee he was being served. But for some reason, he still wasn't satisfied with the overall experience of stepping into one of his stores. Until one day he realized that the majority of Starbucks locations no longer resembled the Italian espresso bars that had inspired him decades earlier. Howard had long contended that Starbucks should be a third place for people, the spot they loved to visit between work and home. But over the years of rapid growth, followed by the company's economic downturn, Howard thought Starbucks had lost some of its appeal as a third place. He wanted to remedy that. Working with a range of designers, Howard and his team reconceived the Starbucks interior. The new Starbucks would incorporate sustainable, recyclable, and repurposed materials to create what Howard called a more contemporary coffeehouse experience. Stores would feature softer colors, softer lighting, and softer furniture. They would also incorporate seating areas that offered long, communal tables where larger groups could talk or work together. And each store would feature a community board highlighting local events and other information that might be interesting to people in the area. On the surface, the changes seemed simple, but Howard believed that collectively they would help revive the Starbucks experience and bring Starbucks back from the brink. He wouldn't have to wait long to see results. In June of 2009, the Lean program was being implemented in Starbucks across the country, while the new Starbucks redesign was being rolled out in select stores. Customers liked what they saw. Surveys showed a 6% increase in partner friendliness, a 10% increase in speed of service, and overall customer satisfaction was up 8%. While Howard took great pride in the turnaround he saw happening in stores, he knew customer surveys weren't enough to quell the financial fears of his board. But at the end of the month, Starbucks stock hit $13.89 a share, a 41% jump from where it had been at the beginning of the year. Howard had shown patience while others panicked. He had held true to his belief that supporting his partners, customers, and their communities would help Starbucks bounce back. Now he had the stock increase to support him. But for some, that still wasn't enough. Shareholders and board members pointed out that Starbucks wasn't turning profits like it used to, and they feared 2009 would be another dire year for the company. They wanted Howard to make more significant cuts, and they knew where they wanted those cuts to come from: the company's health insurance plan. But Howard had no intention of listening to them. Throughout 2009, Howard would strive to build on Starbucks' recent successes, and he would battle to protect his partners and would continue to refuse to believe that you must put profits before people. It's summer 2009 in Howard's office at Starbucks Center in Seattle. Howard tries to remain calm as he nervously paces the room, fully aware that a fight is coming. He's waiting on a phone call from the manager of one of Starbucks' major institutional investors. The investment manager represents a number of clients who have stock in Starbucks, and they're panicking. Howard believes Starbucks is starting to turn a corner, but many of his investors fear another down year. They want Howard to cut expenses, starting with partner benefits. Yeah, hello, this is Howard.
Howard, thanks for taking my call.
Howard and the investment manager briefly exchange pleasantries before the manager gets to the heart of the matter.
So, Howard, we think it's time to cut the healthcare benefits.
No, I won't do it.
Please, don't be naive, Howard. We've owned Starbucks stock for a long time. We know where your major costs come from. This year, you're going to spend close to $250 million on healthcare. That's a 50% increase in less than 10 years. Hell, Howard, is more than you spend on coffee beans.
No, I'm not going to have this conversation.
You have to have this conversation, Howard. The economy isn't turning around and your sales are down.
Those are both true, but we've seen positive signs. Our stock price saw a significant growth in June. Customer satisfaction is coming back across the board. We just have to be patient. There's silence on the other end of the line.
Howard, yeah, we all know how much pressure you're under, and we respect the way you treat the people who work for you. But something's got to give. And right now, you have the license and cover to do this. Everyone will understand why you have to cut the healthcare benefit. They know things are just going to get more expensive. It won't make you or Starbucks look bad.
With newly elected President Barack Obama's proposed healthcare plan, there's a strong belief that the cost of employee health insurance for companies like Starbucks will continue to increase. Howard knows this too, but he's not going to budge. I'm not worried about looking bad. That's not why I won't cut health insurance. The healthcare benefit is a cornerstone of this company. I fought to get our partners' health insurance decades ago, when half my board thought it was insane. They fought me then, they'll fight me now, but I'm sticking by it.
Howard, I have concerned investors. They're seeing a company that has struggled for the last few years, and they listen to analysts who predict things are going to get worse before they get better. You have an easy way to cut a large portion of your spending. You need to do it, and you need to do it soon.
Howard grips the phone tighter in his hand. It's easy to think in the short term. If we cut health benefits, Starbucks will see an immediate increase in profitability. I get it. But in the long term, the cost is too high. We'll lose the trust of the people who work with us. We'll lose everything that sets us apart.
Providing healthcare is part of the foundation of the company. Our advantage over our competitors is our culture and our guiding principles. It's how we get the best people. And I won't sacrifice that in the name of short-term profits. I won't. Over the next several weeks, Howard would receive similar calls from different institutional investors and members of his own board. But every time, Howard refused to give in. He knew the healthcare program might have to change, but he was adamant that Starbucks partners would still receive the best health coverage possible. Howard believed that the healthcare argument was simply an extension of a battle he'd been fighting for years. Profitability did not have to come at the cost of people. Howard would have to double down on that belief. As 2009 progressed, some financial analysts still prophesized doom for Starbucks. But Howard was confident the company would surprise them. The uptick in customer satisfaction and the increase in stock prices the company had experienced in June were positive signs. So even if others couldn't see it, Howard believed Starbucks was about to come out the other side of its financial troubles. Feeling confident in the direction the company was heading, Howard once again turned his focus back to benefiting the greater Starbucks community. Over the past 2 years, Howard had largely focused on programs in the United States. The Election Day marketing campaign, the conference in New Orleans, and even the introduction of the Lean program and new store designs were created to affect American communities.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
He's on different scales. But now Howard believed that he had to get back to doing more for the global Starbucks community. In June 2009, Howard had traveled to Rwanda to meet with a small group of farmers who grew coffee for Starbucks. Howard listened to the farmers' concerns about their future, and he grew more committed to increasing Starbucks' investment in Rwanda. Howard stated that the company would provide Rwandan farmers with resources they needed to increase production and better sustain the land they worked on. And Howard guaranteed that Starbucks would steadily increase its purchase of Rwandan coffee in the years to come. Howard was proud of this new commitment, but even prouder that others at Starbucks were starting to think globally on their own. Some partners in California celebrated what they called Red Friday. Baristas and managers traded in their green aprons for red ones, decked the store out in red balloons and streamers, and focused on selling products that directly benefited the global charity Red, the same one U2 singer Bono had talked about in New Orleans. Howard loved the idea, and it quickly caught on. Soon, Starbucks Red Friday would expand to locations all across the country. Howard saw energy and excitement returning to Starbucks, and his confidence was still high that 2009 would prove to be a better year for the company than many pundits predicted. But in order to make that happen, Howard knew there was work to be done. Many of the changes that had come to Starbucks in the past year stemmed from Howard's desire for the company to find its voice and not let other companies like McDonald's define Starbucks for the public. It's why Howard had traveled to San Francisco to meet with the ad firm BBDO. It's why he had pushed for the Election Day marketing campaign. And for Howard, it's why global and community initiatives were critical in defining the company. Still, he knew those initiatives weren't enough to turn things around completely. Howard had long avoided traditional advertising, but his recent work with BBDO had caused him to rethink his stance. He still didn't want to engage in negative ads against the competition. But he wanted to make sure Starbucks stayed on the offensive and continued to define itself in the public's eyes. Howard now believed controlling his company message was key to getting Starbucks back on top. So once again, he turned to BBDO for help. Working with them, Starbucks launched a new multi-channel advertising plan. They created billboards of their own to counteract McDonald's messages. Full-page newspaper ads highlighted the changes that had come to Starbucks. And the company cut an exclusive deal with the cable news program Morning Joe to feature their products. Starbucks was reaching out to the public, and the public responded. Since returning as CEO in January 2008, Howard had faced a long uphill climb. But his patience, his optimism, and his belief in Starbucks' core principles was about to be rewarded. At the end of the third quarter of 2008, Starbucks had lost $7 million. At the end of the same period in 2009, a year later, Starbucks posted earnings of $152 million. While Howard still saw room for improvement, nobody in the company could deny that he had righted the ship. Business was trending in the right direction, and confidence was growing internally and on Wall Street. Howard found he no longer had to put out fires on a daily basis, and he wasn't constantly clashing with his board and stockholders. Excited about the present state of Starbucks, Howard would turn his focus toward the future. He believed for Starbucks to reach a new level of success, the company had to strengthen its foothold in the largest country in the world. Very soon, Howard would help Starbucks achieve unprecedented levels of success and secure the company's future for decades to come by pouring his energy and resources into expanding Starbucks into China. From Wondery, this is episode 3 of Howard Schultz Saving Starbucks for Business Movers. On the next episode, Howard works to expand in China, increasing the range of benefits available to his partners and secure the future of the company he loves before bidding Starbucks goodbye. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. If you'd like to learn more about Starbucks, we recommend Onward by Howard Schultz with Joanne Gordon. Howard Schultz, a biography of the Starbucks billionaire by James Perry. From the Ground Up, a journey to reimagine the promise of America by Howard Schultz. And It's Not About Coffee, lessons on putting people first from a life at Starbucks by Howard Behar and Janet Goldstein. A quick note about our dramatizations. In most cases, we can't know everything that happened, but all our reenactments are based on historical research. Business Movers is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Michael Federico. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.